This is the Feast of Trumpets, and as we begin here, this is a pre-recorded sermon that you're listening to in Australia, New Zealand, and over in Europe. And this is not meant for those in the States, as they will be hearing a live sermon in both the United States and Canada, just like on the Sabbath, but this had to be pre-recorded. So what I'm going to ask is that in some areas where you're meeting together as a congregation, as you would sometimes do on the high days or the Sabbath, that you would pause at this point in time, as soon as I say what I'm going to say here, but that you would pause this recording and go ahead and have a prayer there locally, because I'm not going to have an opening prayer nor a closing prayer. That's something that each area needs to do on its own. And then you can begin starting once again with the sermon here. So you can do that as a congregation. Some individuals, that individual might give the opening and the closing that is assigned in an area on a normal basis, whether be in some of these areas where you normally have services together where there are elders. If you're by yourself in a small group, just a few of you, a couple, two or three or whatever, you might just choose to go ahead and bow your heads and have your own private, silent prayer. And then as soon as you're finished, each one of you, it'll be obvious who is going to turn the thing on can start the program and continue on then listening to the message for today. So this is the time to pause this. Again, this is the Feast of Trumpets, and as we always do, I want to mention some things that are definitely expected of God's people on a regular basis. I'm not going to go through all the scriptures because we do this at different times on the high days. We only have 7 high days in 3 seasons of the year in scripture that we observe, and on those 7 high days, we do take up an offering. And so in some areas, you are accustomed to doing that, whether you do that put something at the back of the hall, or someone has it and you just give it to them in some areas, to the elders or whatever it might be, and they collect it and send it in. Ever how you handle it in your area is a custom that each one of you is acquainted with. And if you're not, just ask someone who knows. And other areas, you just send it in. If you're on your own or whatever, it's something you mail in, oftentimes obviously before the high day. But if not, right away, soon after, a day or two here, after the high day, something you've set aside. But please understand, it is commanded. It is something we're supposed to do. And sometimes I don't know that people really grasp that. It is as the Sabbath day, as tithing and other commandments we have, so is this thing of giving an offering in 3 seasons of the year on each of the high days, which would be 7 high days then. And, you know, even if we're strapped, even if we're for finances and we're having a difficult time, you know, just to say that it doesn't matter whether it's a dollar or a few cents. If that's all we have, that's all we have. But we're to give it to God. And I'd like to make sure that people don't send in change through the mail. If you can't save up enough on one high day, then save it for another. And hopefully you'll be able to have something you can send in a different manner. Rather than coins, it's not wise to send through the mail. Anyway, we're going to continue on now with the main message of the Feast of Trumpets for this year. When looking at all the history of mankind, last year we witnessed a most unique Feast of Trumpets. As much as the suffering and death of Jesus Christ was fulfilled in the meaning of Passover, and as much as the giving of God's law and the giving of His Spirit had great fulfillment in the meaning of Pentecost, last year's Feast of Trumpets pictured the beginning of fulfillment for the meaning of the Feast of Trumpets. It was a beginning. And we need to understand the process here and how unique that year was last year, the beginning of all this, because that was a very specific moment in time as God gave us revelation and understanding about the 1,335 days. You know, that meaning of the Feast of Trumpets has not yet been completely fulfilled, just as Pentecost has not yet been completely fulfilled in meaning. But the beginning for the fulfillment of the meaning contained in the Feast of Trumpets did begin, powerfully so, last year at this time. And that's an incredible thing to understand. Just as people have kept Passover for so long before Jesus Christ came, and then afterwards in the church, all the time that has been observed and kept to understand, especially at the time Jesus Christ came, to understand the significance of the observances, that's when it was fulfilled. You know, the very meaning at the time when He fulfilled and accomplished what He did and died. All contained in the meaning of a particular day. And just as I said a moment ago, just as much as parts of Pentecost have been fulfilled at different times. And yet, they're very unique. The awesomeness of a single event in history that began it all in one respect, in the giving of the Ten Commandments on the day of Pentecost. And then one specific moment in time, after the resurrection of Jesus Christ, several days later then, we come down to a point of a high day called Pentecost. And again, the meaning in that day, a unique time in history, when we had that which took place for the beginning of the church, and God poured out His Spirit on that day. Incredible to understand the meaning of different events that have timing and events that take place. And yet we have learned, because of things we've gone through, that the day of Pentecost is not yet fulfilled. There is more meaning because of the first fruits and what it means about the first fruits. And God has shown us a great deal about that meaning in a greater way, in a more intense way than we've ever known and understood. And now we're observing the Feast of Trumpets. And last year's Feast of Trumpets, incredible, because it was a specific moment in time like all those other days I just mentioned. So again, speaking of last year, that Feast of Trumpets a year ago was the announcement primarily again to God's own church for the exact time of Jesus Christ's return. That Feast of Trumpets was the beginning of the count of 1,335 days spoken of by Daniel that leads up to the very day God's government is established on this earth through the establishment of Jesus Christ as the King of Kings. And so, last feast is incredible when you understand it. It marked the beginning of the fulfillment of the meaning of the Feast of Trumpets. It truly did a powerful thing, because there are many trumpet blasts that lead up to the final trumpet blast. And that final trumpet blast, as we know, brings us right up to, again, the day of Pentecost. Incredible, the meaning contained in these things. And so trumpets, because there are several trumpets here that fulfill the meaning of the day, it still started in the sense of its fulfillment, and much of the meaning of the fulfillment, the greatest part of the meaning of the fulfillment, began, again, last year and last year's feast, when God gave us understanding of the count that was to begin of 1,335 days. That sermon last year was entitled, A Very Special Feast of Trumpets. The fulfillment in the meaning of the Feast of Trumpets is still being carried out. So this year is also a unique Feast of Trumpets. And that is what this sermon is entitled, A Unique Feast of Trumpets. It is incredibly unique when we consider that only the first trumpet has sounded and the world has been deaf to that sound. And even that didn't happen on the Feast of Trumpets, that first trumpet. So there are things we understand. God gave understanding of a countdown that was to begin, that would lead up to, because trumpets is all about the announcing, and a continual announcing as it gets closer and closer until finally we're there. So it's not something to be fulfilled in that day or has to be done in that day. Each trumpet blast, because of there being seven blasts, cannot each take place on the Feast of Trumpets. That isn't the meaning of it. It's the meaning contained in all of the trumpet blasts that lead up to that final one, that final one that announces the actual coming of Jesus Christ. And so God gave us great revelation last year, at last year's feast, beginning the 1,335 count. And so again, the world's ears, they've been deaf to that sound of that trumpet, that first trumpet. We're still in a state of prosperity and plenty, although the economic condition of the world has taken a large hit. It has not slowed down the arrogance and the haughtiness of man. That's all rebounded and coming back full swing. It's just like what happened with Moses and what he did with all those plagues and Pharaoh's response. You know, Pharaoh, for a while, his heart would be softened when he was in the midst of something far greater than him. And this world, when it began to plunge like it did, and leaders worried like they were that this could be the end of the dollar, this could be the end of the economic system as we know it, that is ruling in the world. They made comments like that. And look, it doesn't take very long, and it started going away. And what happens when that threat seems to be waning a little bit, and people lose sight, and all of a sudden they have these false hopes again, and the arrogance comes right back. That should tell us a lot about why so many things have to take place, why so many trumpet blasts that finally lead up to the very return of Jesus Christ, that there is no other way to humble human beings and to usher in God's kingdom on this earth, for Jesus Christ to indeed become King of Kings, because that's what the Feast of Trumpets is all about in that respect, that announcement and the announcing of those things and the bringing about of that reality finally. And so for those who have eyes to see, you can see this willing, blind attitude in political leaders and economic forecasters and in much of the news media. It's out there again, isn't it? Incredible what we're witnessing, what we're seeing. But today marks a unique time that adds greater understanding to the 50th truth. Now, I've been alluding to this in some sermons and making a few comments here and there leading up to today, and we're not going to have all this today. It's going to be given later, after the Feast of Trumpets, because of the significance, as you will come to understand, of why and so forth these events take place at times and the way God gives them and when He gives us the truth. But when I first started seeing some of this, I thought, wow, this is, I didn't see how there could be a 51 truth, because I believe with all my being that the 50th was the last, and then finally made it very clear, you know, it's an addition to, it adds to the 50th truth, the understanding of the 50th truth. Just as much as trumpets, there isn't just one. There are several blasts. So this is a revelation God has given that is contained in this Feast of Trumpets and in no other day in all of time. Last year was important, began the 1335 days, and today is awesomely important. And you're going to come to understand that far in a far greater way later on here. And so again, this is a revelation, this that's going to be added and given to understanding of the 50th truth, reinforcing it, strengthening it, giving it greater power and purpose. This is a revelation God has given that is contained in this Feast of Trumpets and in no other day in all of time, both past and future. We'll hear more about this on the last great day. You have to wait. There may be some things that God begins to give before that, but primarily, the entire message will come together on the last great day. It is not by chance nor coincidence that today fulfills 40 weeks, 280 days, since the final 1260 days began, the time that the two witnesses began their job. Officially, that's when it all began. Truly did, and we're going to understand those things far deeper later on, what God has been doing that constitutes that witness that officially began at that time. And it has great meaning as well in this Feast of Trumpets. And that will come out in time. You know, God uses 40 in powerful ways. We have seen that when the man of sin was revealed. We saw that last year, especially when we talked about 40 weeks. And there are things given about 280 days. It shows God's judgment. It shows God's judgment and something that He gives, doesn't it? We have learned that in a very powerful way. We have learned from the time of Christmas to trumpets of last year, a judgment that God has revealed and manifested in this world and given through the message it was given, a judgment that's on Satan and the demonic world. There are judgments that are there, but that was the official time, and showing that God is in that judgment and that God is doing it now, that there are certain things taking place that are going to lead up to the fulfillment of those things. And this today is a matter of God's judgment, God revealing things about His judgment of something so important, of things that are important, that started on the countdown of the final 1260 days. Up to today now is exactly 40 weeks. 280 days. Incredible. Truly is. But before we continue discussing what is being fulfilled in trumpets, where we are, and what is yet to come, let's focus first on some of those things that God wants us to learn from the meaning contained in this day. And if we have time, we'll come back to some of this, because you know, the reality is we can't touch upon much because God's giving it later. There's a reason. There are reasons for that. Let's turn over to the last book of the Bible. This book is one that carries us through some important warnings from a loving God who wants us to be sobered by the battle that's in front of us concerning the necessity of being faithful to our calling. As we continue on, We're going to be confronted with great changes in this world, changes that lead right up to the fulfillment of the announcement that's contained in the meaning of the Feast of Trumpets with the coming of Jesus Christ and the 144,000 first fruits with Him. Revelation is a sobering book. It powerfully focuses upon the church and the events within the church, and also upon the end-time events in this world that lead up to a most momentous occasion. The trumpet blast that heralds, announces a new king, the King of Kings, who is about to come and finally bring God's government to this earth. This will be the seventh trumpet of the seventh seal. What an astounding moment in time. All those trumpet blasts, each one announcing, proclaiming events that God said would take place to bring man to humility, to bring the world to a point of being able to receive the King of Kings. And there is no other way. Revelation 1, let's turn over there. Revelation chapter 1 and verse 1. You know, we review some of these things from year to year, and we must go through them. God tells us to think about these things, to think about the meaning of the Feast of Trumpets, to think about the meaning of the Feast of Pentecost during that day, and on it goes. The different high days, we're to think about them. We're to meditate upon them. In Revelation 1 and verse 1, beautiful what it says here. The revelation of Jesus Christ, which God gave unto him, to show unto his servants, you know, things to be revealed, even his coming, even timing. You know, it's an awesome thing when the world speaks of and holds on to certain ideas because it's so hard. When they say no man knows the day or the hour, but they don't know the rest of the story. There comes a time when the day or the hour becomes known, and there comes a time when God reveals it to his servants, the prophets. That's how it's done. And so God gives these things to his Son, to Jesus Christ, and Jesus Christ gives them to the church through, in this case, when we speak about this in time, through his prophets. And so again, to show unto his servants, to bless us all, to help us all to see you and understand, just like it talked about when we understood Daniel in the 1335 days. Incredible. God gave that to all of his servants, to all of his people, to know and to understand. The world doesn't understand, the rest of the people don't understand, but we do. Things which must shortly come to pass. So he doesn't wait until the moment that they actually happen. He begins to reveal things in advance. And he sent and signified it by his angel unto his servant John. So let's pause here and remind ourselves again of the three uses of a trumpet that we so often have talked about in the Old Testament. It's hard to not talk about these things when you talk about the meaning of the Feast of Trumpets on this day. And so those things all have meaning in the meaning of the revelation of what this day is all about. And so again, the three uses of a trumpet that were used in ancient Israel that has much relevance for understanding the meaning of this day. We need to review those things. Again, over the years, we've focused on these things as God has commanded us. We need to focus on the meaning of the Feast of Trumpets. Number one is the call to assembly. You know, to call everyone to assemble. There are different sounds that were given and throughout the camp of Israel in the Old Testament, and they knew what those sounds were. They knew what they meant. And so for us, we learn from this in a very powerful way that it's for the church in order to give direction. You know, to lead and guide, direct us, to call to assembly. That's what happens when God brings us together. You know, we come before God to listen, to hear what God has for us. He leads us. He shows us the direction we're to go, what we're to do, when we're to do it, how we're to do it, everything we've been doing throughout time. Everything Mr. Armstrong did, God was leading and guiding and directing Jesus through Jesus Christ to the church, giving it to Mr. Armstrong to give to the church. You know, instruction, guidance, and direction of what we were to be focused upon at specific times and how to continue to move forward and what needed to be done. And the church was behind it. The church was for it. The church prayed about it. We were very much, it was our life. It is our life. And it still is as God continues to reveal things to us, just as much as things about Gideon's army and the work we began to do and running down the hill together. And then, those things that have taken place that we have been involved in at different times, because this is what God is doing. Number two, to sound an alarm, especially to war. And so we've had, different times, and more will be given, especially as we understand the meaning of what's taking place in the Feast of Trumpets. So again, to sound an alarm, those things that are going to take place, those trumpet blasts that are alarming in that respect as to what they say and what they teach, things that we already understand in large part, but not fully. Things about the first trumpet that we don't really grasp fully yet. Things that are still being accomplished and fulfilled and still have to be fulfilled. Things about the second, third, and fourth trumpet. And then finally the fifth, when Europe arises. War. Powerful war. Things we know that are coming. And then finally number three, to proclaim a time for rejoicing, thankfulness, and praise, especially in the announcing and heralding of a new king. What an awesome time when the great resurrection of the first resurrection, that first resurrection that God has waited for so long, the first great part in his family that begins, that's built upon the foundation of Jesus Christ, who is the chief cornerstone, and then all the rest of the first fruits that are brought. It's what an awesome time. Revelation 1 and verse 3. Blessed is he who reads, and they who hear the words of this prophecy. That's what trumpets is so much about. A call to assembly. The ability to hear what God is giving to us. So much of the book of Revelation, so much of it is about the Feast of Trumpets. It's about that which leads up to the return of Jesus Christ. It's what leads up to the final phases of things that are to take place on this earth. And how that for us, that we are to hear all along the way, to be attuned to what we're being given so that we can learn and grow and be where we need to be and do what we need to do and focus upon what we need to focus upon to keep moving forward. And so it says, blessed is he who reads and they who hear the words of this prophecy. You know, if you read it, it doesn't mean anything unless God's Spirit is in you, giving you ability to see and hear. And then it's up to us how we hear and what we hear then if we've been given that ability to hear the words of the prophecy. You know, there's no one else who understands it. You know, I gave that sermon here recently and talking about, you know, some of the things of where we are in time and making comment about, you know, talking, as I said, in a foolish way, as Paul talked about. You know, I speak in a foolish way that, you know, about where is the truth and made comment about how that if nothing else were true, if we understood it, I'm an apostle. And I said that foolishly because I know that I'm not. I know that I'm a prophet. Why? Because God gives his truth through his servants. And it only comes through and is given to the church through two specific types of individuals, apostles and prophets. That's how God works. And so what an awesome thing that God has given to us to hear at the end time. He's given the church a prophet and prophets, but one who is a spokesman, one who is to teach and lead and guide and direct the body. And there are other things coming in the future that constitute the job of two. And even that will become better known and better understood in time. You have to wait. And they who hear the words of this prophecy and keep those things which are written therein. We keep them. We believe them. That's how you keep them. You believe them. You understand. You know where we are. You hold on because of that. You adjust your life accordingly. Not everyone 100% is on that page. Not everyone fully grasps that and knows and has their life fully geared to the exact timing of everything because, you know, sometimes we doubt and we hold back and we have a difficulty sometimes with absolute total commitment. That's between us and God. It truly is as to where we are, you know, as to where we think we're going to be a year from now. Blessed is he who reads, and they who hear the words of this prophecy, and keep those things which are written therein, for the time is at hand. And what an awesome thing when we understand we're in that time. This was written nearly 2,000 years ago, you know. Incredible to understand. Over 1,900 years ago, things that God gave to John that are now understood because this is the time that he said is at hand, those things that were going to lead up to, the seven churches that would finally lead to the end and the events at the end. And now things are moving fast. The last 2,000 years has been 2,000 years of many people and different time periods and different eras of the church. And here we've gone past all seven. Things are moving fast. Sometimes it doesn't seem that way. But in a span of time, things are moving incredibly fast, and we wait, and we hold fast to what we have. So let's notice how this aspect of being called to assembly and hearing the instruction being given is associated with the meaning of this day. In Psalm 81, we just looked at this in the last series, how important it is to understand as we're preparing for the feast in that sermon series, to prepare for the Feast of Tabernacles this year and being fully prepared. And then we'll come back to this verse here in Revelation. So let's turn over first here to Psalm 81 again, remind ourselves what we've read. We've read it both Sabbaths. I read it last Sabbath. We didn't all turn there. But again, we're going to read it again this Sabbath on this Feast of Trumpets, because today is that day that is pictured here. Remember again, trumpets are used to give direction. We are to hear the direction in the way that God is leading us. Psalm 81 and verse 3, blow up the trumpet in the new moon. It's in the new moon, the Feast of Trumpets, on the seventh month. That's when it takes place in God's calendar. And it says, blow up the trumpet in the new moon, in the time appointed. It's about a holy day. On our solemn feast day. It's the only feast day that you can count on. When, in the sense of a new moon and blowing a trumpet, it has great meaning because it's about the meaning of this day. Verse 8, hear, O my people, God's great desire for us to hear, to have the ears to hear, and to respond then, to hold on to what is given, the ability to hear, and then the choice we have. God doesn't force it down our throat. It's offered to us, and it's up to us to embrace it and to hold fast to it. To not let go, to watch, to be alert. Hear, O my people, and I will testify unto you, O Israel, if you will listen unto me. And that's our heart. That's it is our desire, to listen to what God gives to us. To not be presumptuous, but to listen. And as instruction and guidance and direction is given to us, revelation is given to us, we hold on to it. We live our lives according to it. We make plans and preparations according to it. Verse 9, there shall no strange god be in you, neither shall you worship any strange god. You know, we're to get rid of anything that smacks of this world, especially that which calls itself Christian. We're to get rid of anything that smacks of traditional Christianity, of Protestantism. That's why we don't do some of the same things here at the end, because of people being drawn. We're doing it differently. We're doing a lot of things differently than the scattered groups that are out there, because why? Why? That's a good place to ask us. Why are we doing things differently? Because that's how God is leading us. And if we hear, then we do it, because God has purpose in it. As much as not even having songs and singing songs. I miss them. I enjoy when, before services start, and when I have a little bit of music on there, and I begin to play some of that. I enjoy that period of time and what we're able to have. That little bit of time that we're able to have. And that's so important. It truly is. Things that the meaning that's there, and when we had that opportunity to do those things. Now that we don't have that opportunity because we're doing something a little differently, I miss it. I truly do. But what an opportunity when we had it. And so in before services, I enjoy those songs. I enjoy them in the background there. They bring out a great deal of meaning to everyone who's been around for a long time, because we know them inside and out. We can hear the tune and we know the songs. We know the words. We truly do. It's an awesome thing. So again here, we're to get rid of things that are like the world. And we're to be different. And so we do things differently. You know, we don't pray in circles with hands held together. We don't pray like that. We do what God says. We do it alone. And if it's in a group prayer before services or afterward, then it's done in an organized fashion. And it's about the service. It's about what we hear. We do that together, perhaps at times in a group manner. But as a whole, things aren't done like that. We're not like the Protestant world. We're in a restaurant. We make a scene of our religious ideas and our religious look and appearance to others. You know, we just live this way of life. God doesn't want us to make a show of it. People don't realize a lot of times when people do that, you know, it's not about God. It's about themselves. It's about what others see of them. It's a matter of vanity. And God does not like vanity. Anyway, going on. It says, you shall not worship any strange god. So the way the world does it, strange god. It's not of God. And so we've had to get away from some of the things that are like the world. It's not that everything is wrong even by itself. You know, there are things, music at services is not wrong. There is a time for that, just not this time. Verse 10, I am the Eternal your God, who brought you out of the land of Egypt. Open wide your mouth. God says, I am the God who have brought you out of spiritual Egypt, out of sin. Now open wide your mouth. He wants to fill it. He said, and I will fill it. That's God's will. That's God's desire. That's why he brought us out of sin. So he can lead us and guide us and direct us if we'll hear him. You know, so often people come along and they have this teacheritis. They want to teach others. They think that's their job. No, it isn't. Your job is a disciple. And so I talk about that a lot because we have to get that through our head because we can't have strange gods. You can't do it like the world does where they think you're supposed to go out there and tell others and proclaim what you believe to everyone, you know, that's out there, that somehow we have a job to do that. Or we have certain ideas that we think, you know, come from God. No, if they come from God, they come through the church. They come through an apostle or a prophet. That's how they come to the church. So he says, open wide your mouth and I will fill it. So we seek God's guidance and his will in our life. We seek to hear him. Verse 11, but my people would not listen to my voice. So the history of Israel is they wouldn't listen. And sadly, there have been far too many in the church who didn't listen as they were instructed to. That's what happened at the end of Philadelphia, through Laodicea. That's why Laodicea was spewed out of, vomited out of God's mouth. Incredible lesson there to the church. But my people would not listen to my voice, and Israel would none of me. So I gave them up into their own heart's lusts, and they walked in their own counsels. You know, if you want to do your own thing and you don't want to receive instruction, you know, God lets us. I know we don't want to. I know I'm just saying that if that happens or someone new comes along or someone begins to go astray because they're not getting their way, they're not who they think they are, they're not being recognized for who they think they are, you know. Those things happen. They always happen. They happen year after year after year. Someone isn't recognized in the way they think they should be. This isn't quite what they wanted it to be. They wanted to be teachers or whatever it might be. They wanted to bring in some of their own ideas. And they realize, you know, God's people, we don't tolerate that. We don't do that. That's not our custom. That's not our way. And so they don't have an audience. So they go off someplace else to find an audience. That's the way so many people are. Because it's not about God. It's about them. And they're special, you know, quote unquote, relationship with God. So I gave them up to their own heart's lust, and they walked in their own counsels, you know, in their own vain imaginations, and their own thinking, and what the mind can conceive of and bring up and believe. It's an astounding thing. That's why we have thousands of ideas of Christianity, even within the scattered body. Verse 13, oh, that my people had listened unto me. Oh, I think of if we had listened during Philadelphia to Mr. Armstrong, if everyone would have really listened. But it wasn't that way in the church. People had their own ideas. Ministers began to be lifted up. They thought their ideas were more important than Mr. Armstrong. Just wasn't keeping up with him. He's getting old. He's an old man. And his mind just isn't as sharp as it used to be. Well, they omitted. They forgot God's Spirit. They forgot the power of God to reveal and stir up the one he gave to lead us. I think about when he'd get up there on that stage, you'd think, will he make it? And he'd begin hitting that feeble, weak-looking hand, you know, with a bone showing because his skin was getting tighter, as happens when you get into your 80s and 90s. And he'd bang that fist on a table when he became so worked up, you know, of things he saw and understood, the condition of the church that we were oblivious to at that time, because he knew what was happening at headquarters. He knew what was happening with the evangelists and those who were pastors and different ones out there who were not listening to him. Different department heads and so forth, and the division that was taking place. And so he would give some very powerful sermons. Well, it was God speaking to us, God working through him, if we had ears to hear. And God wants us to hear what he has to say. Anyway, going on. Oh, that my people had listened unto me, that Israel had walked in my ways. It has so much to do with the meaning of the Feast of Trumpets, listening to God, hearing God. And really, our lives at this time, we're in the time of the fulfillment of the Feast of Trumpets. It's so important to be so keenly attuned to what God's giving us. That's why God began to give us several years ago at the Feast of Tabernacles. guidance and direction, the importance, the necessity to be of one mind. That's why he has given us the ministry he has, with one primary voice and a few at other times that are added as well. Primarily one voice, and those others that are added, they're in unity and harmony, or they wouldn't be there giving those things, and God giving the messages then through them, you know, to give some different flavor to the Feast of Tabernacles, to have a few others who are able to speak. But primarily, even at the Feast of Tabernacles and throughout the year, we hear one voice for a reason, because that's the way God is working. He's given us the technology to do that, not through a lot of different ministers, because if we had what we had back in Philadelphia, we would not have the ability to have the kind of unity and oneness to hear God that we have today, the ability to hold fast to what God is giving to us, and the ability to make such fast changes. What God gave to Mr. Armstrong in the revealing of the 18 truths that God gave through him was done over a period of 50-some years, just a little over 50 years, as God continued to reveal truth through him. We are having it done in an accelerated pace. You look at those other truths that have been added, and there's great necessity then that God has operated in exactly the way he's operating. It's a marvel. It's an awesome thing. And I know that as a whole, we have eyes to see it and we have ears to hear that. Well, the greater part of trumpets is about Jesus Christ becoming king over this earth and of our ability to hear the direction that he gives to his church, the body of Christ, because he's the head of the church. I'm not. You know, God gives it to Jesus Christ. Jesus Christ then leads and guides and directs us. You know, just like all the ordinations. You know, those weren't my ideas. They weren't things that I came up with. You know, they're things that God gave, and he gave people opportunity. You know, and sometimes, things that have happened and leading people to the point of being able to help baptize a lot of people as time goes along here, and others who will be ordained in time, you know, when the time is right, that will be added. The primary training that has already been given that they can share with others, as they're going to have a, you know, even so many of you, you're going to have a far greater, more humble attitude later on that you don't possess right now. God's going to help you to develop that. And sometimes it's kind of tough getting through that to get to that point. There's going to be a lot more humility, and you're going to be able to share more with others and do a greater job. That's a beautiful thing, and I hope everyone in the church understands that, you know, of what God is doing. And then sometimes if we make wrong decisions and we don't use the opportunities given to us, and it's, you know, it's we don't any longer have that opportunity. It's the way of life that sometimes happens. Things like that happen. It's just a reality of life. John chapter 10. John chapter 10 and verse 1. It says, "Verily, verily, I say unto you, he that enters not by the door into the sheepfold, but climbs up some other way, the same as a thief and a robber." I like this. I really do. I love it. I love all the Bible, but you know, there are sections that just scream very powerfully so, because this has happened over and over again. We're not talking about the world, and the world is deceived, and they do things their own way, and the Protestant world, and the Catholic Church, and all them, they do things their own way. But when you even talk about the church, people have tried to come up, you know, start with Simon Magus. You know, he tried to come into the church, and there are people who've tried to come into the church, or people who've been in the church, who've been baptized in the church, and try to do some things a different way. They try to interject some things and begin doing it differently. And they're thieves and robbers, you know. "But he that enters in by the door is the shepherd of the sheep." So again, in the world, we see others and things that are done, and they're totally wrong. So we learn this in a spiritual way, even within the church. But there's only one shepherd, truly, of the church. "But he that enters in by the door is the shepherd of the sheep. To him the porter opens, and the sheep hear his voice. And he calls his own sheep by name and leads them out." So again, you know, we're given responsibility. God passes those things along. Jesus Christ gives them to, you know, different ones to administer, who in a physical fashion with God, Spirit of God and the impregnation of God's Spirit, carry out certain physical and spiritual jobs here on earth as a, I guess a better way of saying it, as physical human beings. You know, Mr. Armstrong did that, and the ministry did those things that were given unto them to protect the church, the flock, whatever God gave to be protected by them. That was their job, to protect and to serve and to help and to feed, to nurture, to minister, to give. Serve, that's what it's all about. The word means to serve so often. And so, again, here, the examples we learn within the church of an attitude of mind that we're all to have toward one another, because we're all to serve one another. You know, you don't have to be ordained to serve each other, to help each other. To him the porter opens, and the sheep hear his voice, and he calls his own sheep by name and leads them out. And when he puts forth his own sheep and goes before them, and the sheep, it says, follow them, follow him, for they know his voice. What a beautiful thing. You know, we're able to know by the power of God's Spirit, we're able to know that voice. It's not something physical, except that we hear how he's doing it, and that is physical, because we hear sermons, we hear things that are written in books and so forth, and we recognize something there, because God opens our mind to recognize it, to see it. We receive it on a spiritual plane. But Jesus Christ is the one doing it, in the sense of he is the head of the church, that God has given this to him. Verse 5, and a stranger will they not follow, but will flee from him. You know, people in the church, they hear something else. They hear, this doesn't make sense. This doesn't follow the flow. This, you know, someone else that begins to do something wrong around the church, they realize there's something wrong here. That's why it's so important we be of one mind. That's why it be so important that all elders out here speak the same thing. And if you don't know the answers, that you go to the website, that you make sure you understand what's in there in the topics area and in the sermons and so forth. And you pass that information along, sometimes by just telling people how to go to the site and where to go and where they can find it. Do some research. Find out for them. You know, but we need to make sure that we are in absolute unity and oneness. Because if we don't, you know, what the sheep will do? They'll flee. They'll begin looking elsewhere. So we have a great responsibility, all of us, in doing our job well, you know, and leading people back. That's a part of leading people to baptism. It continues on after baptism, of leading people back to the church, the websites, the sermons, and so forth. Not to give any ideas and opinions, not to teach. That's not our job. Verse 6, this parable spoke Jesus unto them, but they didn't understand the things which he spoke unto them. Then said Jesus unto them again, verily, verily, I say unto you, I am the door of the sheep. All that ever come before me are thieves and robbers. But the sheep did not hear them. You know, God protects his own. He truly does. When something doesn't ring right, when his Spirit is there and we're responding to his Spirit in our life, we're going to be able to hear that which isn't right. And we're going to flee it. We're going to stay away from it. He goes on to say here in verse 9, I am the door. By me, if any man enter in, he shall be saved, and shall go in and out and find pasture. We're going to be fed. That's what it said back there about trumpets. You know, if you will hear me, I will fill you. That's what his desire is. If we will hear. He says, open wide your mouth, and I will fill it. That's God's will for us. Verse 10, the thief comes not but for to steal and to kill and destroy. It's all about self. It's not a matter of love. It's about self, what self can get out of it. You know, being lifted up with pride and receiving something from others that is never meant to be. He says, I am come that they might have life and that they might have it more abundantly. Not just physical existence, but life, spiritual life. That's what happens to all of us. That's what happened to all you new people when you came along here in this past year. You know, to have the ability of having a life living within you, to have the ability of your life taking on meaning and direction, and just like a beacon, all of a sudden there's this bright light that's able to live in and through your life to give you light and excitement and understanding and purpose and direction that you never had before. I am come that they might have life and that they might have it more abundantly. I am the good shepherd. The good shepherd gives his life for the sheep. That's exactly what he did. That's what service is all about. And we're to follow that example. You know, self-sacrifice. It's what we talked about in leading up to the feast. It's about sacrificing our own time, our own desires, you know, what we want to do for the sake of others, for the sake of giving and sharing with others. Verse 12, but he that is a hireling and not the shepherd, or of the shepherd as it is here, whose own sheep there are not. Are we of the shepherd? That's what we have to ask ourselves, each and every one of us, especially those who are ordained. You know, are we growing at one with Jesus Christ and God the Father? So important. So again here, whose own sheep sees the wolf coming and leaves the sheep and flees. You know, someone who's there for the wrong reasons, trouble comes along, a difficult time comes along, and because the motivation isn't right, it's not about the church. You know, something else is more important. Perhaps family, or perhaps job, or something else is more important. Perhaps a mate. Perhaps a mate. You know, there are some of you who need to get your act together. You don't have time, really, to get your act together and put the church first and quit putting your mate first. God comes first, truly. And then bring your family in. You know, if they're not a part and can't be a part of it, you better not let them rule your life. They better know. You know, and if they don't like it, they have choices to make, don't they? But if you cower down, if you play a politician, you know, if you play political games with people, whether it be on the job or whether it be in family or whether it be with your own mate, you know, if they're not a part of this, and even if they are a part, you better stand up firm and make sure that, you know, that everyone in your family knows that God is first. The church is first. The church is first in everything. You know? And make sure that you're not compromising. That's what a politician does. A politician compromises, and that's lying. You lie. We lie if we're not careful in order to compromise. Compromise means that you have to give up something. And if you give up something of God, if you give up something, a stance for this way of life and for upholding what is true and right, then indeed, what a horrifying thing that is. Okay? So it talks about seeing the wolf coming, leaves the sheep and flees. Are we there all the time for one another? Or is it easy to flee sometimes? To give in? Do we put the church first? Do we put God's people first over others, whether it be in our own family? You know? And if they're a part of the church, then they should be in there with the church and everything. They need to learn that from your example, that the church is first because God is first. And it goes on to say, and the wolf catches them and scatters the sheep. Well, that's part of the warning, isn't it? War. Part of a trumpet sermon for sure. Because sometimes we have warnings that are given to us. It's a different sound, isn't it? It's a little bit different sound than just receiving instruction and hearing. It's a little bit different tone even, because there's correction involved and direction involved as well in that when it's about war and warnings that are given to us. And it's up to us to hear those things and to realize the importance of the Feast of Trumpets, because we are in spiritual warfare. And if we're not fighting it all the time and we're compromising and giving in here and there on occasion, what a horrible thing that is. Verse 13, the hireling flees because he's a hireling and cares not for the sheep. We better care. We truly better care, each one of us, for one another. We had that two sermons about how to enter this feast in a very unique way, making sure that we truly care for each other. Because if we do things selfishly, we're like a hireling. We're in this for the wrong reasons. It's for selfishness and for selfish reasons. When times get bad, what do? Oh, we whine and we'll moan and we'll cry, you know, about why things are tough and why things are bad and why things aren't going my way and blah, blah, blah. Get out my little violin and let me play a song, you know, because we feel sorry for ourselves, because it's about self. Can't let that happen. You can't let that happen. You can't have that in your life. You got to fight. We're in war. We've got to hear the sound of the trumpet. I am the good shepherd, Jesus Christ says, and I know my sheep and am known of mine. As the Father knows me, even so I know the Father, and I lay down my life for the sheep. Do we? That's the question we all have to ask. You don't have to be ordained to do that. And if you are ordained, then you have a greater responsibility upon you, far greater than what you really even understand. You grow an understanding of that in time. It's something you grow in. You don't receive it all at once. But some of these warnings I'm giving, I'll tell you, better take them to heart in a very powerful way, especially in those positions of responsibility, because they're not small, especially at the time we're in right now. You know, when you're in the midst of the battle, you better be able to apply everything you've ever been taught and strive to do it exactly as it's given, or you can lose your life. You can lose your life. You can lose out. I lay down my life for the sheep, Jesus Christ said. So do we, because it's a matter of sacrifice. It's a matter of giving to the point of sacrificing of self. And other sheep I have, which are not of this fold, them also I must bring, and they shall hear my voice. You know, it's an awesome thing. I love it. All these new areas, going in different areas and visiting different people, all these new people coming in different areas, and it doesn't matter what point it is. People can go through and get caught up to this point in time in a short length of time. truly, it's an awesome thing. They can go through and read, as in the book of Acts, and know that this is true. Everything that we've talked about, things that people who are part of the scattered body, they mock and make fun of because they don't get it. They don't understand the 50th truth. They don't understand some of the things that have changed the time. They don't understand about the fasting. And yet new people can come along and understand that fast we had last year, or this past year here, the beginning of the year, you know. And I shouldn't say, I guess it's not past year, but it's in the past year here and at the beginning of the year. And that fast we had, that even that changed things because it was God's will. And we entered into that. We heard the voice and we entered into something because it was benefiting us as well in our attitude, in our spirit, in our mind, that we might become more at one with God. And indeed, God's fulfilled and accomplished those things in and through us and heard those prayers and fulfilled those things that have also altered matters of time here at the end time in order to bring about greater humility, if it be possible, because it's still up to people whether they're really going to respond. Sadly, the reality is many may not even respond to that when they're given the opportunity. We'll know in time. God knows. And so Jesus Christ says, and they shall hear my voice, and they shall be one fold and one shepherd. What a beautiful thing. All the way through this period of time that we're in, all the way up to May of 2012, the end of May, Jesus Christ returns and a great church enters into a new era of time. What an awesome thing. Returning to Revelation chapter 1 now. Revelation chapter 1 and verse 3, it says, "Blessed is he who reads and they who hear the words of this prophecy." You can't hear it without God's Spirit. You can't read it without knowing what the truth is. And God has to give the truth. There's been much in this book here that continues to be revealed. The timing and various events that continue to be revealed that aren't still known and understood yet. And God will give it in his time when it's proper. And so much has been given just in the last few years. It's incredible. "Blessed is he who reads and they who hear the words of this prophecy and keep those things which are written therein." Again, keeping it. "For the time is at hand. John, to the seven churches which are in Asia, grace be unto you and peace from him who is, who was, and who is to come, and from the seven spirits who are before his throne, and from Jesus Christ, who is the faithful witness, and the first begotten of the dead." You know, firstborn of the dead. He died. He was in the tomb for 3 days and three nights. Dead, dead, dead. Just exactly as he said he would be. Exactly as God said he would be. "And the prince of the kings of the earth, unto him that loved us and washed us from our sins in his own blood and has made us kings and priests unto God and his Father, to him be glory and dominion forever and ever." So again, it's talking about what he's doing, what's been doing for the last 2,000 years, and what was actually being done by God even before that was some. But primarily the largest portion of the preparation of the 144,000, the government, has been done the last 2,000 years in the church. And kings and priests that have been prepared, that are going to return with him in his government, in the government of God on this earth. Verse 7, "Behold, he comes with clouds, and every eye shall see him, and they also who pierced him." So in time, it doesn't mean right there that day. Those who killed him, they're not going to see him that day, but it shows he's coming back. He's coming to this earth and setting up God's government. And in 1,000 years, there's going to be an incredible resurrection. And even those who pierced him, they're all going to see him. They're all going to know him. They're all going to be very much aware of who Jesus Christ is, truly. "And all kindreds of the earth shall wail because of him." Now, different times, different things that people go through. Even so, amen. So again, speaking about his return, those things that lead up to his very return, and those things that even happen way beyond that. The book of Revelation leads up to that time and the fulfillment of this day. What an awesome thing to understand. Then we go through chapter 2 and chapter 3, and it goes through and it talks about things that of the church eras. You know, it just gives a little bit here about each era and what would lead up to, finally, the very last era and what that era would experience. And we experience those things, so many of us in the church. We experience that Laodicean era. And those things that lead up to the fulfillment then of this day. Revelation 4 and verse 1 then. "After this it says, I looked and behold, a door was open in heaven, and the first voice which I heard was as it were the trumpet talking with me, which said, Come up here, and I'll show you things which must be hereafter." You know, things that were going to come to pass. Now, we can go through all these things. It's incredible what's here. It truly is. When you begin to go through some of the things here in Revelation and just to think about what God has given us to see and what He's given us to understand and the things that have happened on this earth. And I think of the seals that began to be opened up and things that the world never knew about. You know, there are many people through time, after this book was written, when they had this book in their hand, people who've gone into and studied and looked into and read these verses over and over again. This has been read so much by so many people over the last 1900 years. Truly has been. It's an awesome thing to understand, and yet everybody desiring to know, and even those in the church desiring to know, and yet they didn't know. They didn't understand what was given here, because it's like what was given to Daniel. God said to Daniel, just shut up the book. Not given for you at this time. It's going to happen later. And the same thing is true about the book of Revelation. John didn't know what these things meant. He saw certain things. He wrote them down. That was his job. He was a prophet. And yet he didn't know what it was all about. He was a prophet. He wrote these things because God gave it to him. As much as God has given it to me now to show the meaning of these things. And is continuing to show meaning in these things. You know, not because I understand it, because I can read it and understand it, but because God has just given it to me in my mind, in my being. Because just as he gave it to John. And he's giving it to me now. But to think that this long, to wait, of so many people who have read these things and wanted to know and thought about what does it mean. Even in the church in Philadelphia, we thought we had a good handle on a lot of this, about the seven seals and about the different time periods and different things that were going to take place. And yet God just kind of gave a little bit of an outline. You know, if you've ever done an outline, I do all my notes in outline form. You know, Roman numer 1, and under that, to the main subject matter, I have A, B, C, and sometimes under that, other subheadings of 1 and 2, and maybe on occasion, A, B, and C under that, small letters, you know, and because it's an outline, it's a flow, it's an organized thing. And that's what God has done through time here. And it's an organized flow of things that God has given through time to understand and to see. And it's an awesome thing to understand. And so there's this flow in a very organized manner. And yet in Philadelphia, we only had some of the Roman numerals, and they really weren't filled in too well. We had a few Roman numerals here and there of some main subject matter and a kind of a framework, but not understanding how it all filled in at all. Just a basic outline, a basic overview to know that these things are going to come to pass and to know a little bit about what some of them might entail. But not full revelation of the meaning of it because it wasn't for them. Even what the message to Laodicea, you know, how many of us read those things back in Philadelphia over and over? I heard many a sermon about Laodicea and what was coming. And yet we didn't know what it meant. We knew the church would be spewed out, but we did. We had no comprehension, the depth of that and what it meant. And so chapter 5 begins to talk about various things here that are given and leads up to, as it talks about here, the things that lead up to the seven seals. And as it starts here then in we might begin here, I guess, in chapter 6 and reading some of these things. But again, what a powerful book, the book of Revelation. And so much of it is about this day and everything that leads up to this day. So here we're still in the very beginning. And finally, chapter 6, we begin. And I saw when the Lamb opened one of the seals. See, that there's only one is able to open them up, and it's Jesus Christ. And there are things that weren't given until it was time for the seals to be opened up. There are things we didn't understand about the seals, even the seventh seal and timing of things. We don't know until Jesus Christ gives it. There are things about the seals we had no idea of until retrospect, because he showed us what did happen by looking back, by what happened in the first four seals. We came to understand things about Matthew and Matthew 24, as Mr. Armstrong saw it in a physical way because that was always given to him, that part of the outline, but he wasn't able to fill it in fully. He knew that Matthew 24 went along with those first four seals. And now we understand it in the spiritual plane, that it was about the church. It wasn't about physical things to happen on the earth. It was about spiritual things. And so God has continued to reveal and give us understanding. But that starts out right here with this chapter. And all leading up to the very return of Jesus Christ, all very much about this Feast of Trumpets and those things that happened in the end time and what Jesus Christ began to reveal and give to the church. And I saw the Lamb when he opened one of the seals, and I heard, as it were, the noise of thunder, and one of the four creatures saying, "Come and see." And I saw, and behold, a white horse, and he who sat on him had a bow, and a crown was given unto him, and he went forth conquering and to conquer. You know, there are people who read through this, and there are some who read this thinking that was about Jesus Christ because being on a horse and then confusing the horse at the end about the return of Jesus Christ, and they don't understand. No, this is different. This isn't something good. This is horrible, you know. It's about false Christs and false ministers that were going to arise. And we came to an understanding then when this all began in the church, when Mr. DeConch gave that infamous sermon in December of 1994. The seal was opened. We didn't know it had been opened until later on when God began to get us out of our sleep and begin to build upon us, begin to build with us and helping us to grow again and become stronger again so that he could give us more and more in his specific timing. And so again, there are sermons that cover the period of time of the meaning involved in the first five seals. And let's jump ahead to the sixth seal, where we are at this time. Well, I shouldn't say where we are at this time. We're in the seventh seal. And I guess a portion of this, when I was going through some of my notes, obviously, far more than that. And when we understand it, what's being spoken of, we recognize we have passed that point in time now. What a short period of time that's been. You know, because I've gone through some of these scriptures before and talked about them, and this year here I'm adding to it. You know, each year God lets us build upon it more and more. He's giving us more and more. But in a part of a review of some of these things and what they mean, well, let's continue on. You know, some of those things that happened through time, some of those seals that were opened up. Again, we don't need to go through each one of those, but, you know, I think of, I guess because of 9/11, I saw a bit of a review here the other day on TV on because of going back at the anniversary here on September the 11th, and they had some things on TV, and I watched some of it in awe, thinking it's still incredible to think that it happened. And now I look at it in with eyes that are far wiser, that has understanding of what it meant on a spiritual plane. Seven towers, eventually, that fully collapsed. And to see the power that was involved, there are things that just normally wouldn't happen. They just normally couldn't take place in this world. It'd be planned out, to be plotted, to know what could even happen, you know. Call it a fluke, but it wasn't a fluke. It was a part of something that had to take place. And what took place at the Pentagon and the prophetic meaning behind all these things that began to happen in this nation that show a collapse that's going to take place. And that's what this particular seal is all about. So much of it is about that. And kind of giving a picture, a synopsis, a capsule, in a capsulized form here. We're here. This is it. This is prophetic. These things are prophetic of what's going to follow, of what's going to take place. A complete, total collapse. And as it goes on to say in verse 16, and it talks about those who hid themselves. Well, that doesn't happen. That didn't happen during the sixth seal. Well, there were some who did on a small plane, that which was pictured prophetically. Those who died, things that happened, and people who ran in horror and so forth. But again, it talks about those who hide in the rocks and the mountains and anywhere they can find shelter to get away from what's collapsing in and around them. Oh, horrifying thing. But it leads up to that which is going to happen on a magnified scale in the final period of time, when finally the physical part strikes the earth. And verse 7, it said, "And the mountains and rocks fall on us and hide us from the face of him who sits on the throne." They don't know. And even during this final 3.5 years we're in, is when we finally get to the physical part of these things being fulfilled and what's going to take place when trumpet blasts begin the second, third, and fourth, and then finally the fifth. It's a thing that grows in momentum with time. It doesn't happen at every moment, at every trumpet. It's something that builds up to various events that happen in different times when these things are fulfilled. This is prophetic. Things about the sixth seal are things that are looking forward in time that are shortly going to happen. And it says, "And from the wrath of the Lamb, for the great day of his wrath has come, and who shall be able to stand?" Well, it didn't come at the opening of the sixth seal. That's all prophetic. It's saying, we're there. And what took place in 9/11, this is prophetic, and it leads up to the very return of Jesus Christ. What an awesome thing. So again, a defining mark in time. A defining mark in time when these things have taken place and the very opening of the seal and the very day of those events that picture something so powerful and so mighty. So now we come to a distinct moment in time toward the end of the period of the sixth seal, when things are held up for a short time in order to accomplish a final great task concerning the church that leads up to the fulfilling of a most awesome event in all Earth's history, which in large part was the announcement last year's Feast of Trumpets. Let's notice Revelation chapter 7 and beginning in verse 1. It says, "And after these things I saw four angels standing on the four corners of the earth, holding the four winds of the earth, that the wind should not blow on the earth, nor on the sea, nor on any tree." You know, things that God continues to reveal that we don't even fully understand yet. Sometimes we think we have it all, but God continues to give more, and He's going to give more even here. Verse 2, "And I saw another angel ascending from the east, having the seal of the living God. And he cried with a loud voice to the four angels, to whom it was given to hurt the earth and the sea, saying, Hurt not the earth, neither the sea, nor the trees, till we have sealed the servants of our God in their foreheads." And so there are specific things that are taking place. We understand that much of this is about a particular period in time that we've already gone through, the 13, you know, when we talk about 1335 days and the beginning of the counting of time, and some of the things that were going to happen from that point forward, you know, and that would lead up to, finally, trumpet blast that would begin, and things that would begin to occur on the earth. And we're in an awesome time. And again, some of these things are going to be for the last great day, so I'm going to move on and continuing to give the meaning of this day and what this day is about, and to focus upon those things. And so, again, the four angels that were held back for a time, well, let's jump ahead a little bit to find out here now, and then we'll come back at this point. Revelation 8, verse 1 and 2, it says, "And when he had opened the seventh seal, there was silence in heaven about the space of half an hour." And so there are things we understood. We understood on trumpets the beginning of a count of 1335 days, and then we finally came to 1290, you know, in November, and we understood a time for the seventh seal to be opened. And it says, "And he opened the seventh seal, and there was silence in heaven about the space of half an hour." And so we know those things that led up to that which was fulfilled prophetically in time for the church. And the only way you can know it's fulfilled prophetically is by what you've been told, that led up to the final 1260 days and in December of this past year now, and a process of accounting that began at that point in time. And the two witnesses, that their jobs officially began at that particular moment in time. "And I saw the seven angels who stood before God, and to them were given seven trumpets." So when the seventh seal was opened, there was time here given, and it says they were given seven trumpets. So again, the first four trumpets are primarily about the demise of the United States and the loss and end to the great physical blessings given to Manasseh. And a part of that's begun. A part of that has begun. And it's going to continue on until it's complete. It doesn't happen all at once. And just like that first trumpet, it doesn't happen all at once, especially that one, because it has that which is prophetic in it that's going to happen throughout the rest of the seals, primarily the next four seals, because finally, really, when you do come to the fifth one, then it's over. That's it, because the conquering has taken place. But the other three that follow behind the one, number two, three, and four, those are the ones that bring everything down and a greater fulfillment of what taken place in number one, just as with the first seal. It was 2, 3, and 4 that followed that totally did the number on the church. It was prophetically fulfilled about the church and the complete scattering that was to take place in the very beginning and a continual scattering, and that which took place in the final third. Now, an awesome thing to understand. Revelation 8 and verse 13, it says, "And I beheld..." And we come to this fifth trumpet here, "and heard an angel flying through the midst of heaven saying with a loud voice, Woe, woe, woe to the inhabitants of the earth by reason of the other voices of the trumpet and the three angels which are yet to sound." You know what? In so many ways, this is such a blessing. If we understand it, because these are woes now. The greatest of devastation that begins to come on the earth doesn't begin until this happens. The greatest of devastation because of the fifth trumpet, because of the beginning of World War III. This is when it begins, World War III. And that's when great things begin to happen in a very massive way all over the earth. Great war throughout the period of time that remains, whatever that period of time is. So let's return to Revelation 7 and verse 1 and notice some of the things being said here, because all of those trumpets lead up to that final fifth one that sounds there. And that's one of the first woes. And the third one, the second one, I should say, we know that what that's about. We'll come back if we have time for some of this. But again, Revelation 7, verse 1, it says, "And after these things I saw the four angels standing on the four corners of the earth, holding the four winds of the earth, that the wind should not blow on the earth, nor on the sea, nor on any tree. And I saw another angel ascending out of the east, having the seal of the living God. And he cried with a loud voice to the four angels, to whom it was given to hurt the earth and the sea, saying, Hurt not the earth, neither the sea, nor the trees, until we have sealed the servants of our God in their foreheads." And so there is a period of time that was to pass and be fulfilled here. Verse 4, "And I heard the number of them who were sealed, and there were sealed 144,000 of all the tribes of the children of Israel." So this sealing in a very powerful way that had to take place. We have gone through that. We've talked about those things last year and the meaning of that. The meaning of what it means about these tribes, understanding it's a spiritual thing. It's a spirit. They're spiritual names, not physical tribes, not literal physical people, but spiritual. It's made up of many people of many different nations. That's why I love what we see in the church of God calling. He's brought people to literal physical locations, to the United States, to Australia, to New Zealand as a whole, and to Western Europe and Great Britain, which is again a part of Western Europe, but separated there by water. But the Eastern part, I'm sorry, the western part of Europe there, that is a part of the Israelite nation. You know, there have been some that have come in from other countries, you know, places that people have come to from in all of, into Ephraim and Manasseh and other of the tribes that have come into those areas where we're able to have services and work with some people and primarily people of other countries and other nationalities. They've been brought into this area in order to be worked with. You know, God hasn't gone there to work with them. That's coming later here. But those that are being worked with first have the opportunity, the Gentiles, all the people of Gentile backgrounds throughout Asia and Africa and South America and different areas, Central America, you know, God brought them to a different area to be able to be worked with, to be molded in fashion, because this is the only way we're able to do it at this time. And God knows what he's doing. He's the one that's doing it. So again, the seven trumpets of the seventh seal lead up to that seventh and last trumpet that sounds on the last day of man's reign on earth. And it is on this day that the seven last plagues are poured out, and Jesus Christ, along with 144,000, are given reign of all government on earth. And a very powerful thing. So again, please understand, in the meaning of the Feast of Trumpets, it's about many trumpets, seven trumpets that must sound, that lead up to the seventh one. It's like the time on the different days there when the children of Israel brought into the Promised Land. And they came to Jericho, and they circled the camp. And then finally, on the seventh day, and all those things that happened, you know, finally, all the sevens there, and the importance of that, and what it means. And then finally, on the seventh trumpet, and the seven last plagues on that last day. Powerful, powerful what God is showing here, that he brings it all, but all to bring something up to pass, to bring something into being. And so God is doing that in a very powerful way. So the Feast of Trumpets, you know, you can't fulfill it in one day. It's about something that is accomplished and done. It has great meaning in it. Passover was able to be finished and accomplished in one day. You know, Pentecost is accomplished in several different days, but still on the day of Pentecost at different times. But trumpets is unique in that respect, because everything can't happen on the Feast of Trumpets. You can't do it all in 3.5 years. There's only, you know, you could have, how many feasts can you have in there? Feast of Trumpets. You can't have all the meaning accomplished. And so we're going to learn more about some of that later. But again, what an awesome thing to understand that the entire period of time that leads up to the very return of Jesus Christ has great meaning in how God couples it all together. That's the beauty of it, of all those trumpets that lead up to the last trumpet. And the greatest beauty of it all is, then in that respect, a greater beauty that's been given to us is Pentecost. What an awesome day to realize this is what Jesus Christ has been doing for 2,000 years, is preparing for a period of time of the first fruits being able to be resurrected. And how appropriate, how beautiful can that be, that is done on that particular day, on Pentecost. But all the trumpets and the meaning of trumpets that lead up to this is so powerful. And what God has announced on two high days, two feasts of trumpets, is totally profound. All we know so far about this day that is unique, as I mentioned, is that it is a specific period of time from the 1260 days that when it began. We have 40 weeks, 280 days that have passed. And that's awesome. It truly is. It has great meaning in it, of things that God is giving to us and revealing to us. And the first one that began to take place when it all started anyway is the beginning of that count, the beginning of time, you know, the final 1290 days. And it leads up to the final 1260 days. And all those things that are in the count that followed the 1335 on trumpets, you know, that which God gave on that day when he finally showed us the importance of what? The first fruits, blessed and holy is he. What does it say there? It's a beautiful thing. You know, all those days that we wouldn't know about if it wasn't for what God gave us last year for the Feast of Trumpets and the beautiful meaning involved in all of that, and to understand something that was written by Daniel so long ago, you know, to comprehend and to grasp a greater meaning of something that was stated here in Daniel chapter 12, when it says here in verse 12, blessed is he who waits and comes to the 1335th day. What a beautiful thing that began on trumpets and leads up to that count. That's so beautiful. Because what is it about? Who are those who are blessed that wait? 144,000. How much more appropriate, how much more truthful, how much more beautiful can it be than it's on the very day of Pentecost? I marvel. You know, God gives things. He enriches the meaning and the depth of meaning of his holy days, and still causing some people some difficulties. You'll get it straightened out in your mind in time to understand the beauty of what I'm talking about here today. You know, in time, it'll have greater beauty as it does to me right now when I'm speaking of it. I am in awe of it. I am dumbfounded by it. I truly am, of how it all so beautifully fits together. So awesome. God is so awesome. What he reveals to us is so glorious, so exciting, so inspiring. And so, again here, we come up to this point in time, the seven trumpets of the seventh seal lead up to the seventh and last trumpet that sounds on the last day of man's reign on earth. Again, it's on this day that the seven last plagues are poured out, and Jesus Christ, along with 144,000, are given reign of all government on earth. Revelation 11, verse 15 says, and the seventh angel sounded, and there were great voices in heaven saying, the kingdoms of this world have become the kingdoms of our Lord and of his Christ, and he shall reign forever and ever. What a beautiful day. The day of Pentecost, a final period of time where the entire government, Jesus Christ and the 144,000 that starts it all, is established on this earth. Awesome. So we have been on an incredible journey, especially in all that we have experienced from the time of last year's trumpets to trumpets today. It's been an incredible year. It really has. It hasn't been easy. It's been difficult. Been a lot of difficult trials, especially as we've led up to this Feast of Trumpets. A lot of people, a lot of things have been taking place out here. The spirit world is so stirred up. You know, they don't have much time left, and it's starting to crush in around them that they don't have much time left. Thank God. The misery and suffering they cause on this earth, I so look forward to them being imprisoned and put away for 1,000 years. So we've lived a most unique year. But overall, just mentioned again, the church doesn't fully grasp or truly grasp the incredible significance of that experience. Not yet. But in time, and as time continues, we will. We're going to understand a little bit more of that significance on the last great day. A little bit more that God will add. So as was mentioned at last year's Feast of Trumpets at the end of 2008. I'm sorry, if we go back in time here, let's go all the way back. And thinking here at the end of 2007 and especially the beginning of 2008, and as we came up to the story of Gideon's army, you know, we began together for battle at the top of the hill. We're likened to a hill because of our small size, the government of God, which is really small right now, and a small hill. Yet we constitute God's government, his work on earth at this time, and we prepared for battle. You know, I think of those times in 2007 and finally up to 2008 and now here we are at 2009 and all that we've experienced in such a short length of time and how small we are, but how much has been done, how much has been prepared out here. you're going to be astounded. And so again, all these things I think about Gideon's army and where we are now, all this reflected that the cost was weighed and that people were fully committed to running down the hill together. Large numbers of books have been sent out worldwide as a result. Several hundred thousand now, or several hundred thousand, if you will, now, as well as larger numbers of downloads. Large numbers of seeds have been planted that will help accomplish very great things once the manifestation of the trumpets can be clearly seen physically. And that will be something that will only grow through time. See it all at once. People aren't going to embrace it all at once. And the vast majority never will embrace it. They're just not going to. But God is doing something different with us than He was with Gideon's army. And that has to do with the reality that we're waging a different kind of battle. Ours is very much about character, the mind, and the qualities that God is molding and fashioning in us. That doesn't happen overnight. It takes time. It truly takes time. So we've been tried and tested in time, through time, especially in the last 40 weeks. And that was because God withheld certain knowledge and understanding for us in order to accomplish something more important within us, in our being, and in our mind, that could not be accomplished by any other means. The knowledge and understanding we have received concerning what began at last year's Feast of Trumpets and magnified then in December of this last year, and the final 1260 days began, has tried us as to what is truly inside us. And what is most important of all, brethren, what's inside of us. The molding and fashioning never stops. And the focus is still on God's church and God's leadership and that which He's bringing on into a period of time here when Jesus Christ returns. Those who are going to be resurrected, still being molded and fashioned, being prepared to do a great job throughout this period of time and especially beginning at that time. And then those of you who have the opportunity of being molded and fashioned now, opportunities in the future that are going to be incredible, exciting, and wonderful. If you hold fast, hold on to what God has given to you. If we do exactly what this day pictures, have those ears to hear and to listen to the instruction, of what God pours out upon us. Because as God said, He said, open wide your mouth. If you will hear Him, He said, open wide your mouth and I will fill it. And that's what God is doing. It's a beautiful, beautiful thing. Well, I don't believe there's any need to go back and discuss some of those other things because really I can't go much farther than this in discussing some of the things that are going to be given to us later on that God has already revealed or to be given to us at a specific moment in time. And so I look forward to that. I look forward to the Feast of Tabernacles. I know that you do. God lets us have that kind of anticipation and excitement and to understand we're still being molded in fashion. He's still pouring out more and more upon us. And He's given us the ability, unique ability, to be able to hear His voice in a most profound way as He works through the church and in the church and gives us guidance and direction and inspiration. God is excited about the times we're in. And we should be excited about the times we're in. I am excited about the trumpets that are going to continue to have that blast that takes place. You know, not because of those things that are horrifying, but because of the humility. You know, the humility that followed 9/11 was a beautiful thing. It's gone now. You know, my wife and I were talking about that. You know, people were forced to watch some of those things and be reminded, perhaps every once in a while. You know, people wouldn't be thinking exactly the way they are. You know, wouldn't understand the importance of some of the battles that are out there in this world, but people don't want to be bothered with those things. They want to go on with something else, and they find fault with now, you know, and some of the stupidity of things that just tear down government and tear down things in this world because it's just there are things out here that are wrong, that's a part of a prophetic thing that's taking place. And then also, you know, time, the economy, and what began to happen this past year at the end of 2008, that thrust us into 2009. And those things that began to happen with the economy when people began to lose a third, you know, a fourth, a third, and a half depending on where they had their monies, of their livelihood, of things they had saved up. Some things that would take so long to build back up that some people, because of age, don't have time to do. They've lost so much. And yet some people have gained some things back. And the haughtiness comes right back. It doesn't last very long. The humility does it. And so we've learned a lot through this period of time. We've come to the ability with the blessings and being able to understand more fully the mercies of God and why things must happen the way they do. Why suffering must be there in this world. Because it's only through suffering that people can come to humility. So it's not a bad thing. It's a good thing. If we can be humble, if people in this world can be humbled, whatever it takes, whatever it must be, so be it. In order for them to have true happiness, true joy in life, true fullness of life, then bring it on. And that's what this is all about. And the trumpets and the trumpet blasts that are going to continue to follow. So we have gone through much in order to refine and prepare us more fully for what's ahead of us. This is far more meaningful and far more powerful than we can fully grasp at this time. You will come to understand this again, even more fully, on the last great day. Let's look forward to a great feast, to a great atonement, to purifying ourselves, humbling ourselves before God, so we can enter the feast with a right spirit and a right mind, closer to God, drawing closer to God, and then the Feast of Tabernacles, and finally, the last great day. Before long, it'll all be behind us.